Welcome to the Advance Your Art podcast, where we talk about the journey from artist to entrepreneur and everything in between. You've worked hard to hone your craft. Now take it to the next level with tips, techniques, strategies, and routines used by successful artists to grow their businesses and careers. Now, let's get started and have some fun with your host, Yuri Cataldo.
Good morning, Brad. Welcome to the podcast. How are you this morning?
I'm doing so well, Yuri. Thanks so much for having me.
Awesome. Of course. It's my absolute pleasure. And so I want to start off with, because you are a man of many talents and there's a lot of things you're working on. When you get asked the question, what it is that you do, how do you answer that these days?
That's a hard question. You know, I usually tell people it's a couple things and then their eyes glaze over. But historically, I've done real estate. I worked in a real estate firm for a couple of years in New York City, which is great. I learned a lot about sales and marketing there. Mm-hmm. I worked as a day trader for a while after my dad passed away. When I was 24, like that was pretty sudden. I expected him to hang on for a while longer. And, you know, when he passed away, it was like, oh, okay, well, I got to, you know, really go for it and, you know, live my dreams, which at the time were like, I want to make a lot of money. Right. Okay. So like ego took over and I wanted to be financially free. So I felt like the best way to do that, and I was always fascinated by stocks, was to learn the stock market. So I really dove into it and I got a few really great mentors that were, you know, really instrumental in me understanding both sides of the market, both the, mm-hmm. you know, the retail side and kind of the market maker side, right? People that trade stocks and options and people that write these options as well. So it was a really high level education. I got pretty successful at it. And one of the things I was really good at was spotting trends. And one of the trends was 3D printing.
Okay.
Right. So 3D printing is really an exciting technology. It takes the world of mass production and it shifts it to a world of mass customization. So you can print anything on demand that's customizable and basically form fitted for your particular usage. You don't have to print 1,000 of something to get the cost down. The costs stay the same. There's no waste, no printing materials left over. They can be reused. Mm-hmm. You don't have to set up a whole manufacturing process. So it offers a lot of great benefits, and I really believe that's the technology that's going to allow us to colonize space and other things in the future. So, you know, it's an exciting technology, and I managed to bend the ear of one Sir Richard Branson about it in 2011, and we were chatting, and he's like, that's really fascinating. You know, you should email me. I'm like, okay. Billionaire Richard Branson, I should email you. I'm, you know, 25-year-old kid or whatever at the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, naively, I didn't get his email. And when I went back to his assistants and handlers afterwards, they're like, yeah, buzz off, kid, whatever. But he ended up doing, like, multi-million-dollar deals with some of the people at that party. So, anyway, long story short, that was, like, the first time when I was, like, really validated about my ideas. And I'm like, oh, this is something that might have legs.
Okay.
And then I started an investment club after that, shortly after. And that's actually how we met. It was through the society, which is Neil Screwed, which is great. And he's been a mentor for many years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I started kind of just talking about my investment ideas and a couple other guys got involved. And one of the ideas was obviously 3D printing stocks. And so somebody called me up after they all went to the moon. I got published in Forbes, 300,000 reads there. These stocks went like 10X. And one of my friends calls me up and he says, hey, I just paid for my wedding with that one stock tip. I was like, whoa, that's great. You know, he's like, yeah, I wanted to say thank you, but I also wanted to see how I could give you more money to manage. I'm like, money to manage? I've never done that before. I didn't know what that looked like. Mm-hmm. And call up these smart people and be like, hey, what does this look like? They said, you start a hedge fund. And I'm like, ooh, a hedge fund. That sounds exciting. What does that entail? And they're like, well, you do this and set up that and it's in Delaware and there's accountants and lawyers and here you go. Here's everything. And I'm like, wait a second. Hold on. I don't need like a Series 7. I don't need like, you know, some sort of, blessing by the Pope to be a hedge fund manager. I could just literally go and be a hedge fund manager. They're like, yeah, if people are willing to give you money and it makes sense, you go and do it. I'm like, okay, cool. So I did that. I made a list of like 200 people that might in some circumstance decide to give me money. And 17 of them said yes. So I got pretty good at pitching and raising the money. And we started trading in 2013. That year we ended up doing 106% return, which was far and beyond anything that I could have expected or hoped for. Mm-hmm. So that was really exciting. And And that was kind of it. And then, you know, during that process, I realized that I was doing things for a very egoic reason. I was doing things for the financial security and for the money and playing in a zero-sum environment, right? When you trade stocks and options, there's a very clearly defined winner and loser. Mm-hmm. And you don't know who that is yet. It's not a win-win scenario in any case. And I prefer to do business now with win-win-win involved. So it's you, it's me, it's your customers, it's your clients, it's everybody who's involved in this transaction wins in some way. And that's just the way I prefer to live my life. And I think most great businesses, you know, the true huge businesses of the world, create value in that way. They create wins across the board for everybody. So that's how I prefer to do things. So to wit, I shut down the hedge fund. I wound it down. I wrote everybody a big check and everybody's super happy. Like, what are you doing? Shutting it down. I was working 16, 18 hour days. It was just very physically demanding on me and mentally demanding. I'm an extrovert, right? I like talking to people. I like being with people. So sitting right behind a computer screen all day wasn't exactly my idea of what I wanted to do for the next 30 years. So I just decided, you know what? Let me just start working with entrepreneurs. I really like working with people. So I started doing that. I helped some of my friends out. What I was doing at the time was coaching and consulting, but I didn't really realize it, or I wasn't getting paid for it. I just kind of liked it. And then some people started reaching out and be like, wow, you're really smart about this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, how do I hire you? I'm like, oh, okay. You want to give me money to do this? I'm like, great. And I named a figure I thought was insane and unreasonable, and they paid it. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome. You're going to pay me five figures just to talk to you? This is incredible. So I did that. And, you know, that was kind of my new little side gig. And I eventually got really down the rabbit hole in more strategies to like scale that, right? Because you can have one-on-one conversations, but you know, the model doesn't scale, right? You have 24 hours in a day. So I started building a small team and I started getting more leverage. I started learning about copy and ads and digital marketing and Facebook and like all these different pieces that, you know, really help you to leverage that one thing. Like if you can have a conversation and help and serve one person, you can do that on a big scale, but you need tools to do that. So now, that has kind of morphed into a couple different things. So there's like, you know, we still check out real estate deals. We still invest in real estate. I still look at the stock market, although I'm less, more passive about it and less active now. Okay. You know, I have a pretty good speech on that. I can, if your listeners are interested, they can contact me and I can send that along. It's really great. A lot of actionable takeaways. Mm-hmm. And then I have a digital marketing consultancy. It's called marketyourcourse.com. And we specifically niche focus on people who have an audience that want to monetize that audience and that serve their audience at a deeper level. So we believe wholeheartedly that the book is the new business card, right? And if the book is the new business card, well, we feel like the online course is the new book, right? It gives people an opportunity to spend a lot of time getting to know your content, which means they know, like, and trust you enough to hire you for something else if they want to have that implemented. And, you know, the stair-step model applies, right? They buy the little thing and then the bigger thing, and then they eventually end up working with you directly. So it works. It's all part of a larger offering, and I think there's different levels in which you can serve people, and that's what I'm working on building now.
Okay, wow. That's you've said so much in a short period of time, which is amazing. It's, you know, like I said, you're doing amazing things right now, and that's great.
Thank you.
So I wonder if we can unpack some of that, because I know now you're, because before I had been on your site, Make More Marbles. Is that your, I don't want to say like your like core site right now,
it's a blog.
It's a blog where you kind of write about
a lot
of this.
You know, I had to figure it out, right? I just kind of started it. Like, this is my philosophy. I'm a win-win-win guy. Like, I want to make more for everybody. I want to make the pie bigger, right? I'd rather have 10% of something than 100% of nothing, you know? And how can we make that happen? So that's really where the philosophy came back. But it's really like a bigger play on like the societal aspect of like, you know, we really believe that scarcity is the norm, right? Our whole economic system, which is not a science, by the way, it's just their best principles that we know. Our entire economic system is predicated on scarcity, but we're seeing more and more rapidly technology's changing. You know, things are becoming demonetized and democratized and spread in a way that, you know, it's going to get cheaper and cheaper to live and to thrive. And eventually we'll get to the point where, and I want to help bring this about, food, energy, water, and shelter in a sustainable way for all humanity is available to us through the leverage of exponential technology. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we can change the scarcity paradigm, and that will have ripple effects throughout all society, right? If it's not about what I can get, but about what I can give and contribute, and I know my basic needs are covered, that removes the fear on the floor for me and creates a floor for me where I can thrive from, right? I can begin to focus more on high-level pursuits. I think most of humanity doing that would be a boon to humanity.
Yeah. So let's unpack that a little bit more then. So the idea of scarcity mindset versus abundance mindset. And I know that I listened to actually an extensive lecture that you gave on this. But if somebody who is, you know, so again, primarily the people listening to my podcast are artists, and a lot of times they're struggling, which then, you know, kind of gets you into your own way and your own world. So can you just talk a little bit about the scarcity mindset, what that's about, and then abundance and how you view all of that?
Yeah, I think the thing to realize is that the universe is really a creative place. It's really a big sandbox, and it's constantly expanding, right? And you know, you might be religious, but just speaking to the creators and the artists out there, right? If you believe you're a creator and you're any type of religious, maybe you are, maybe you aren't, well, then weren't you like formed in you know, aren't you co-creating with the universe, right? With God or infinite intelligence or divine or whatever you believe in, right? If we're made in that image of that creator, then we are also creators to some respect. And that's true, right? We see creations of humanity all the time. Like entire cities are built out of the ingenuity and creativity and vision of humanity. You know, the most wondrous things that didn't exist 100 years ago. Like if you told me that I could look inside you 100 years ago without cutting you open, you would say I was a witch or crazy or whatever, right? But now right. I use x-rays every single day, right? Yeah. We all have supercomputers in our pockets that didn't exist 8 years ago, right? The smartphones are more powerful than the spaceship that we sent people to the moon with. So it's just an incredible time. So it's just like opening up to the possibilities, like not just seeing what's there, mm-hmm. but seeing how far we've come, how fast, and realizing that we're not taking linear steps anymore. We're not taking 30 steps and you're 30 steps away. We're taking 30 exponential steps where each step is a doubling of the last step. And then, you know, when you're 30 steps away, you're actually six times around the world, you know, if you do the math, right? It's like the old adage. You want to play golf for 10 cents a hole? Okay, cool. We're going to double it every time. And where does that land us? You know, it's like 20 grand at the end of the game. So, you know, it's kind of that. So that's one piece. I think the other piece is just understanding that money and economics is really a fungible, made up system. And there's more being created all the time, right? Mm-hmm. The Federal Reserve and all these different banks, like in real terms, they're creating money out of thin air. It's not tied to any scarce resource. Really, they're just deciding how much to put into the economy, and they're making more of it. You know, it used to be like printing, actual printing of money, but now it's really just numbers on a screen, right? They decide there's $2 billion more today. We bought some bonds or whatever, and now it exists, and it didn't exist before.
Right.
So all that money, you know, exists, and it's going to consistently, you know, billions of dollars trading hands. And like once you're tapped into the flow of that, money from an individual standpoint is abundant, right? The amount of money that any one human could need is only like limited by the amount of service to the amount of people they're willing to render, right? So if you're willing to solve more problems for more people, mm-hmm. or bigger problems for the same people at scale, like there's no limit to the amount you can earn. On the contrary, there is a limit to the amount you could save and scrimp and worry. And, you know, there's only so far you can go before you're living in poverty. So wouldn't it be better to spend your energy expanding yourself to grow and serve and contribute at a higher level, because givers get, and they do in aggregate, right? It's not about any one deal, one person, one transaction. It's about having so much going on that in aggregate, you're always taken care of, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. So I know it's once you're in that place where suddenly you're, you know, you're scrimping and saving and it feels like the world is against you, it's really hard to get out of that. Are there, what do you use to kind of snap yourself out if negative emotions or something get in your way?
Well, it's really a math problem, right? If you don't have enough, there's actually a mental thing that Roger James Hamilton talks about. It's called being in infrared, right? Okay. It's like you have not enough money, you're losing every month. And then they have different other colors, like red is like you have just enough to have nothing. Orange is like, okay, you're starting to save, you know, and so on and so forth. There's 9 different levels. So I really recommend that book for anybody who's really, really struggling, because I feel like the tests that it gives you, it'll give you like a quick test to determine what your creative strength is and where you should live, you know, what you should be spending most of your time doing. And then it also gives you a sense of who you should be partnering with or hiring in order to stay in your flow, so that they can be in their flow doing the things they love to do. Like maybe you love spreadsheets, like, and systems and numbers, and that's your jam, right? You don't want to be talking to people. Cool. Well, you want to partner with somebody maybe like me or you who's really good with people, and then you guys balance each other out, right? And together you can do so much more than either one could do on their own. Again, to make more marble slots. So I really recommend that book, The Millionaire Master Plan by Roger James Hamilton. If you want to go really deep down this rabbit hole, you can check out Wealth Dynamics. It's also the same guy. It's $100 for the test, but it's an amazing test, and it gives you like a 40-page document. And it's not like these kind of Myers-Briggs or StrengthsFinders where it's like, oh, you're this, and there's no context or how you use it. It's like, no, you're this, and that means you should do this, this, and this, and here are your next 3 steps, and go. Here are the people you're looking to partner with. Go. Here are the things that you'll be good at. Go. Right. And it's really, really powerful. That's how I build all my teams and coach all my clients now. I think I had you take that test as well.
You did. You did. It was actually fantastic because it really helped me, especially I took it a few months ago, and it really helped me focus in on what I was really good at, because I'm, you know, like you, I'm a man of many interests and many random talents, and it's sometimes hard to narrow it down to see what your niche is. So that worked out well.
Yeah, so I think for the people that are in that space of infrared, I think your number one thing is, like, get to the point where you're out of infrared, right? Whatever you got to do, hook or crook, get a job, whatever you got to do, just get out of infrared so that you have the space and time and, like, you know, the worry is gone. Mm-hmm. Like, I got my bills covered, I'm good. Like, I'm not losing every month. That's a good headspace to be in to get to the next level. But one needs to happen before the other, right? You're not going to instantly go from zero to billionaire. There are steps along the way, right?
Right.
So ultimately, like, getting out of that is the most powerful thing you can do. Just realizing that the world isn't so horrible and that you can put food in the fridge and keep lights on and all that stuff. So whatever you got to do to get there is the number one priority for anybody in there. And, like, literally to the detriment of everything else, don't create anything new.
Yeah.
Don't go down any more rabbit holes. Don't spend any more money on crap. Just get a job. Figure it out. Get out of infrared.
Right.
Step one. And most people can do that inside a month. You know,
Easily, or
get the support they need to do that inside a month. You know, just literally ask people, what do you need help with? I will do it. I don't care. Right. Digging ditches doesn't matter. Like, just do something to get yourself out of that place. You know, and that's a really helpful place to come from. And then from there, it's like just recognizing that you don't know what you don't know. Like, if you used a pie chart, right, to describe this phenomenon, there are things that we know that we know. And then there are things that we know that we don't know. Like, for example, I'll give you two examples. I know that I can drive a car. I know that I can't fly a plane.
Right.
Right? I'm not going to show up to the airport and be like, oh, I'm going to fly the plane. Oh, wait, I don't know how to do that. Right? I just know.
Right.
That I don't know how to do that. And then there's this whole, like, 98% of things that there could be possible to know that we don't know that we don't know. We just have no idea. Right? We're very limited in our perception, our abilities to sense things in the environment. So, so for me, it's like, you know, just understanding with a beginner's mind that there are so many more levels that you have. And that's exciting to me. Like, I love that. Like, the fact that you can level up, that's not like a closing off thing. It's like, this, it's only getting better from here. Like, this is the floor. This is the worst it's ever going to be.
Right.
And from here, it's great. And then working on your emotional set point, I'm giving you a lot of big ideas here, but, like, slowly over time, reaching for that next best feeling to the point where you get conditioned to feel better and better all the time, because your feelings will ultimately create your reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, you are. You are unpacking a lot of big ideas, and I like it. I like pushing yourself that way. So what got you interested in this, like, self-improvement and, like, constantly pushing yourself? Is that something that's inherent inside of you? Did you learn it?
I just realized how despondent I was and how I couldn't get my own shit sorted, excuse my language. I couldn't get my own emotional stuff handled consistently. Like, I'd be up and down. I would be, you know, turning to alcohol or caffeine or this or that, and I'd want to escape, or I'd want to, you know, use sex to numb out, or I'd want to go travel, I'd want to move, or whatever I'd want to do. I just couldn't. I thought that my emotional state was based on external input.
Okay.
That's what society teaches you, right? That you need that car, that watch, that house, that life, that job, that girl, that this, that that. That something outside of you is always the key determinant of how you feel inside. And again, this is our economic system at work, right? If you're not feeling less than, you won't be in enough pain to buy something to fix your problem. And as you know, as you start buying stuff, you know, you realize pretty quickly that it's never going to fill that hole.
Right.
Right. If you go after the accolades and the achievements, like, there's always a bigger hole to fill. You're never going to meet all your needs to significance. Right. So understanding what your needs are is the first step. And everybody has the same six human needs. This is Tony Robbins 101. So I'll just go through them quickly. It's certainty, variety, significance, love and connection, growth, and contribution. When you're living in the first four, you're meeting the needs of personality. Right. Maybe you're smoking or drinking, or you like violence or whatever it is. They meet some of those needs. And if you meet three or more needs, it doesn't matter what's healthy or not, it becomes an addiction, right? So that's why people get addicted to smoking. They feel certain they're going to change their state. They get some variety and it breaks up the day. They feel love and connection to themselves, like they're giving themselves a break. Three needs, jams. Smoking is addictive, right? If they meet those needs in a healthy way and replace that habit, then they'll quit smoking. Same thing with drinking and violence. Like, violence is, you're very certain if you put a gun to somebody's head that they're going to pay attention to you. You're going to feel significant, Right. You're going to feel connected to that person. You don't know how it's going to turn out. So there's variety. That's four things, right? So humanity is never going to be rid of violence because it meets four of our core needs. When people really start to thrive, however, they move to that growth and contribution state. Mm-hmm. Right? They start focusing on how can I grow as a person? How can I contribute? And that becomes a virtuous cycle, right? Because the more you grow, the more you have to give. And the more you give, the more you tend to grow. And that's a really powerful place to be in. So that's what people are really successful, both from a monetary standpoint mm-hmm. and from a fulfillment standpoint, which is more of an art because it's different for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. The keys to success are like step by step. It's pretty simple, right? You need more leads, more sales. You need more add more value and manage your money well. Cool.
Right.
But fulfillment is different for Yuri. It's different for me. It's different for everyone listening at home. And that's really what people – it's the sad thing about life is that most people never get to a place where they can really find their fulfillment. Consistently, because I get stuck in those base needs of survival and scarcity, mm-hmm. you know, and that type of thinking. And that's, you know, really where I want to get people out of is that place. So I hope that thoroughly answers the question. I can
yeah. No, that definitely does. So it's so with this and your own personal journey, and you already mentioned a couple of books, and you mentioned Tony Robbins. If somebody wants to start and just like go down this rabbit hole, what are some resources you recommend they check out?
Oh God, I mean there's so many, right? I think just cheap, easy, ready to go, you know, YouTube type stuff. Check out Dr. Brené Brown's talk on vulnerability.
Okay.
This stuff may like I don't know who's listening, but like if you think this is woo woo and you think I'm a weirdo or a wackadoo, that's fine. But I just want you to suspend disbelief and try some of this stuff out, right? What do you have to lose? You can go back to doing whatever you were doing before, and results may vary, right? Mileage may vary. But just try some of this stuff. You can check out a book by Esther Hicks and Jerry something. I forget their last name. But I think it's Jerry and Esther Hicks. It's called Asking Is Given. And that's a really, like, out there book. But it really talks about the different emotional set points. And there's some really valuable takeaways. If you can stick through the woo-woo parts, there's some really valuable stuff in that book. I'm just trying to think of like books and cheap ways to get started.
Sure.
And you can get any of these at the library, right? Any of these are available at the audiobooks. Like I don't want money to stand in the way of your personal development. And people think, oh, I got to be going to seminars or joining these big masterminds. No, of course not. Start where you're at, right? Mm-hmm. I think a really powerful resource are all these motivational videos. As silly as it sounds, like people are putting out so much motivational and inspirational content. And by bombarding your brainwaves with that stuff every day, it has the effect of changing your patterns. It interrupts your patterns and it gives you another way to look at things, right? The hero's journey, watching somebody's success after they've been down and beaten and broken and finding the pieces of that relate to you is really powerful. Reading biographies is super powerful for me mm-hmm. of people that were successful. And then when you couple that with like a wealth dynamics, where it's like, okay, this is who I am, or this is the personality type I am, and these are other successful people like me, and to read their biographies was just mind-blowing for me. Like to understand how Jack Welch became the CEO of GE, or to understand how Sheryl Sandberg came in and took Facebook from a great company to a billion-dollar world-class company, mm-hmm. right? Or, you know, Michael Eisner or Howard Schultz, like, all the stuff they went through and all the failures and all the trials and tribulations. And then we just take for granted that they're successful. Like it was an overnight thing, but they were at it for 15, 20, 25 years before they really started to get it right. A lot of them didn't get it right till they were in their 40s and 50s. So it's never over, guys. It really isn't. Like we're always learning. We're always growing. And as soon as you commit to that and burn your bridges and say, I'm never going to stop, that's where life really starts to open up for you. And I really feel like the more you put energy into that, the more life helps you. Right. The more people you're responsible for, the more people that look up to you, the more people that need your help and resources and you give to, the more life gives to you in return because it sees that it's making an investment that is a positive growth investment. It's a win-win mm-hmm. across the board. But if you're not helping anybody, including yourself, then what's life going to give you? Really, at the end of the day, you know, and you could use life as a metaphor for humans, for God, for whatever you believe in.
Right.
Right. But people tend to gravitate towards people who are already being successful in some way. Right. Everybody wants to surround themselves with success. So if you were successful in whatever way that means to you, and the measuring stick I use is how many people have I impacted, mm-hmm. well, opportunities come your way. And it's just one thing, like you can't connect the dots looking forward. You just can't know Like, I might have this conversation with you today, Yuri, and we may broadcast this out to your listeners, and one of them may be, you know, somebody who just tweaks something, a little belief, something out there, right? And 10 years from now, they change the world. You know, you just don't know how these little snowflakes can add up to an avalanche.
Right.
You just don't know. You have no way to know, so you just put your best out there every day. And if you commit to that, life starts opening up for you guys, I promise, in ways that you will just never understand or comprehend. It becomes magical. It becomes magical to be alive. Mm-hmm. And it's harder and harder and harder to access those despondent, hopeless states that we get into sometimes. Because you're just so grateful and alive and joyful and understanding that life is this beautiful journey that you get to live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. That's fantastic and wonderful. I'm curious then, because I know that you are short on time. Again, in the very beginning, you mentioned about how you were just chatting with Richard Branson. And so the idea of networking and slowly building out your tribe. How do you approach that? How did you get in a room with Richard Branson?
So that's a great story. And I'll tell that quick, and then I'll kind of talk more about strategy and high-level thought about networking.
Sure.
And I'll give some examples as well. So let me unpack the Richard Branson story. So I was sitting in bed. My dad had just died, and I got a tweet. And Twitter was still a thing. I don't really use it much anymore, but Richard's Twitter account, whoever was using it, said, we have some tickets left over for this event. It's a gala event. There's a couple of tweets, and it was like, you know, they were 5,000, they're 2,000. And at the time, I didn't, you know, $2,000 was a lot of money to me. So I'm like, all right, you know, this is a lot. But I'm like, when am I going to get to meet Richard Branson in a private party and spend 2 days with this dude?
Right.
You know, it's like $40,000. It's $45,000 for a week at Necker. Like, it's not cheap to go hang out with this dude. And I'm like, this is a bargain. I have to do it. Like, I just have to find a way. So it was literally the next day. I booked it. I didn't even put my underwear on. Like, I was still sitting in bed. And I booked it for my phone. And I booked a flight. And I'm like, I'm going to be there. And I bought some clothes just to look not like a schlub. Mm-hmm. And I went. And I just figured it out, right? Credit cards, whatever. And it was one of the most eye-opening experiences, both for the reason that I told you about, you know, a billionaire is paying attention to my ideas and thinks they're good ideas. That was like mind-blowing to me, but also just the other people I met in that room. And I still have relationships with a lot of people. I met Eric James that night, and I met John McDaniel, who sold the company for like $1 billion that night. And I met Carolina Kurkova, the supermodel, comes up to me. It's like giant tall woman is like in broken English asking me about 3D printing. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, where am I right now? This is surreal. So, you know, just getting yourself into rooms with people like that is so you just realize, holy crap, there's people playing a game that I know nothing about at a level that I can't even comprehend yet. But it's like, it's addictive. It's like, wow, okay, these people are really moving the chicken at a high level. 12 people in that room that night. We raised $3 million for charity.
Wow.
In that little room with those 12 people. And I was the definite slouch in that room. You know, like me and a couple other people in there were like, we were like, you know, the young kids, just like starry-eyed. But Richard treated us like equals. He was interested in our stories. He gave us time to talk about what we were working on, what we were excited about. And that just showed me, like, you know, it doesn't matter that he's a billionaire. He's an interested, interesting human being with a lot of experience. And he understands that he puts people first, then life takes care of itself. You know, it's an amazing thing. So, like, I just learned so much just from being around a presence like that. And he was, like, kind of endearing and a little nervous to be around, too. You know, he actually felt like you could feel him like having to like work up the courage to like start talking to people. I don't think he's that extroverted as a human. I mean, despite all his crazy stuff, like I saw him really like take a breath and like center himself before he walked into the room. I was like, wow, interesting. You know, and like I'm a little more comfortable in social situations than the billionaire rebel billionaire. I'm like, that's pretty cool. Like you just see like these people are humans and they have their own stuff and they're fighting battles that you know nothing about.
Yeah.
That, you know, kind of gave you like this understanding of like, wow, we're all in this together. We're all human. So that's one piece, right? And I just wanted to unpack that story. I thought it was a lot of really cool lessons from that. And that was just like one of those big eye opening, you know, right place at the right time moments. But it would have never happened had I just said, well, it's $2,000 and that's too much money and I can't do it. Like, you just do it. You know, like if you have an opportunity like that, guys, just jump all over it. You just say yes.
Yeah.
Life will figure it out for you. So that's one piece. And then just the networking piece, you know, like, so I'm good at this. I'm really good at this, but it's both a learned art and that's in some way like a talent. I'm more geared towards it than maybe other people are, right? If you do well dynamics, I'm a supporter. It's way to the extrovert side. Mm-hmm. So that's where my power comes from and my flow is with people and relationships and, you know, talking my people's ear off and never shutting up so that you can get a word in edgewise. And I'm sorry, but that's just, you know, how I add value, right? I have a lot of disparate things running around my head. My brain's always making connections to resources, links, books, people that people should meet. What's the next thing they need on their journey? And I can literally go to anybody at this point almost and be like, as long as they need, want, or desire something and they're willing to tell me about it, I can probably help them in some way.
Sure.
And that's a powerful frame, right? And it took me a while to get there. But like it first started out as, believe it or not, when I was a kid, I was picked on all the time. I was bullied. I was beat up. I didn't fit in. I would get bounced around between friends. I would get in fights. And just I didn't really get it. Mm-hmm. And it created this pain and deep, like, sense of need of belonging in me that I just – it was a wound that was never going to heal. So, like, just out of pain and sheer, like, frustration with the social thing, I was just like, I'm going to learn this. So I spent all the time I could around people that just were cracking jokes and funny and on it and, like, the center of attention. And I just – I learned how to tell stories and really engage people. But more so than that, I learned how to really engage people one-on-one and get to the heart and create comfort and trust and rapport and get to the heart of what they were really feeling and saying deep inside and really read between the lines and ask the right questions and share vulnerabilities of myself, which is why I recommend Brené Brown because she's great at this, you know, that would really help people open up and share with that. So that was really helpful too. And you know, over time, it's just tens of thousands of conversations with people. I've been in 19 countries, 43 states, you know, all over the world, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of deep relationships. And I haven't always gotten it right. That's not the point. But in the aggregate, like, I've had a PhD in freaking networking. And my network is crazy as a result. And it's rare now that I meet anybody that we don't have somebody in common. That's just a really easy way to, like, to hack that. Like, oh, you know, so-and-so. Like, I texted you yesterday. I'm like, hey, Yuri. And it was the wrong Yuri. Like, how many Yuri does an average person know where I'm getting it wrong? You know, so, like, that's just kind of it. And I'm trying to find a better way to manage all that now. And it's just overwhelmingly abundant. But guess what? When you know that many people, the collective number of problems that you can solve for money or for free or for whatever, just to endear yourself to the right people is endless.
Yeah.
And I'm working on getting better about, like, not being a puppy dog and not, like, coming off as needy, but it really came from a deep need. That's where it really started for me. So I'll use another example just to take myself out of it. There's a guy named Jason Gaynard, JaysonGaynard. If you Google him, Mastermind Talks will come up and some other wonderful things he does. He's got a book called Mastermind Dinners. Jason was broke. He was like $200,000 in debt. He was in a rough spot. And he decided, well, I could go bankrupt or I could work my way out of this. So he kind of looked at all the options. He's like, well, I could get a job. It's really not going to do it. Or I can spend money to network with the highest quality of people I can possibly find. And so he just went to hawk some more and put together these mastermind dinners where 8 to 10 people get together, highly curated, very intimate events, very specific. He would make sure that people were in different industries, so there's no competition, and like do these kind of cross-pollination events where people could talk to each other and network. And people loved them. It was like a mind-blowing thing. And then he derivated a lot of value because they would start introducing him like, oh, and you do this next one, I want to invite this person and that person. And all these interesting people started flowing to him. And he eventually, you know, based on Dunbar's number, picked the best 150 people, including like Tim Ferriss and a lot of big influencers, and put on mastermind talks. And now that event, it's 150 people. I think it's like $7K a clip. And he does like $1 million in a weekend.
Wow.
You know, just from the power of networking. Because people want to be around people that know, like, and trust each other and get it. And they're on the same kind of path. And they have a similar belief structure. And they value the same type of things. And there's incredible value in human connection that, especially as entrepreneurs, we don't really mesh with most of the world. Most of the world doesn't believe like we believe or think like we think. So it's hard to find people that are really a part of our tribe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So, no, that's so very recently I've been started working with more of startups. And when I mentioned it to some other friends of mine who work in corporate jobs, they don't quite understand why I would be chatting with startups because I talk about the potential that I'm seeing and a lot of these other things. And they're like, well, we don't get it because we are, you know, a lot of them think more of like that. Well, I want the more the secure side, this other side, and it doesn't quite make any sense to try to do this kind of thing. I'm curious. So then just in your own personal life, because again, you're a guy who does really cool things and is really busy. What two or three books have kind of moved the needle the most for you?
So, let me think. Four Hour Work Week, I read that 7 times. I think I missed Point of the Story. And, you know, Tim's an excellent writer, and he's got a lot of really smart things to say. And I really got fixated on that, like, 4 Hour Work Week lifestyle. But I missed the whole point that it was, like, about serving people. Mm-hmm. Where the money would never do it, right? It's all about the joy that you get from serving others and seeing people light up as a result of what you're doing for them. And the money's nice, too, right? That's like the piece that was missing for me with the hedge fund. So that was one book. Another book was Abundance by Peter Diamandis.
Okay.
I read that on a road trip in 2011 with our friend Ryan, actually, from Philly. We drove from San Francisco to Philadelphia, and I just read this book. I made notes in every margin. I dog-eared all the pages. Excuse me. And, you know, I saw an interview with Peter and President Bill Clinton about a few months after that. And, you know, he got to talking to Peter. He's like, oh, you read my book? He's like, yeah. And he pulls out a copy of it, and it's dog-eared and written in every margin. I'm like, there's some smart people reading this stuff. This is pretty fascinating. So, you know, like, that book is like a playbook for the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's still like 40 years ahead of its time, and it's 5 years old or 6 years old now. So I recommend that to everybody. And then he's got a follow-up book called Bold, which is like the how-to. So, like, Abundance gets you really excited about what's possible, and then Bold teaches you how you can create it. And now he has this great mastermind group, which, you know, I was trying to buy a ticket to, but they're all sold out. So I'm just going to literally tailgate the event. So I'm like, I got a suite at the hotel where it's being held, and I'm like, I got a streaming package so I could watch the event. And I'm literally going to be on the other side of the wall watching the event live in the lobby. And they can't kick me out because I'm going to get to the hotel, right?
Right.
And then when people come out to network, these are the people I want to be networking with and getting involved with because they're going to change the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll be shaking the hands and kissing the babies, or, you know, shaking the babies, kissing the hands, whatever you want to say.
Sure.
And that's a terrible joke. I got to stop telling that joke. You know, and that's the group I want to be in. But, like, if I had a mindset that just because somebody told me no, or just because there's no more room at the inn, you know, that that's it for me, like, I wouldn't be where I am today. So, like, I'm just, like, if you come away from this talk or this interview, or if anybody's listening at home, if you come away with one thing, like, there's rules to life, but you get to make up what they are. Right. And if you find a set of rules that works for you, great. But you got to try out a lot of rules to figure out what they are. So if you subscribe to somebody else's version of what life is and they're no smarter than you, then you get very quickly trapped in a particular path. But if you want something different than what they've gotten, or something that you want, or the times have changed, the opportunities are different, you have to make up your own rule set and keep trying and iterating and learning from mentors and examples and other people until you have a rule set that works. So, like, for me, the networking piece is like the thing I focus the most time on, because it puts me in the most flow and it opens up the most incredible opportunities to travel and network and grow and learn and do business. And I just know that's going to be leading to something that's a $1 billion opportunity. Like, I will be a billionaire. It's just a matter of how fast.
Sure.
And that's a bold statement for anybody to make, but it's just a consistency thing. And I know that bigger and bigger and bigger things are going to come across my plate as a result of just doing what I'm doing. And people think I'm nuts. They're like, wait, you want to do this for me and you want to do that for me? And I'm like, absolutely. You know why? Because anytime I need something, it's available in abundance through the power of my network. I'll give a quick example. You know, on Facebook, I'm really active on Facebook and I have a lot of great friends on Facebook. I reached out just, you know, quick, oh, I need this on my Facebook wall. And they become like 40 people reach out. Oh, Brad, check out this person. Oh, Brad, here, you know, PMs, this one, that one. Like, you see my private message list, like, you know, 2 days worth of private messages. I got to scroll down with 50 people. It's crazy. And it's just because I just make it a point, without asking for anything in return, to just add value to everybody I meet. My number one primary question when I meet somebody is, how can I leave this person better off than I found them? Right? And sometimes I lose money and sometimes I lose time. But here's the rub is, again, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. So I don't presume to know what that might lead to, if anything. I just don't. I just put my best foot forward. I try to help people. And when it comes back, it comes back. And it comes back in droves, like 10 times what I ever put out. It's just an incredible thing. And people ask me, like, how did you do this? And they want the strategy. But it's really from the mindset that I believe that I will be taken care of. That's what you like. It's not what you're doing that gets you the result. It's not what you have that gets you the result. It's who you are. It's who you're becoming, right? It's who you're showing up as that gets you the result. and that person should be continually refined. It's just easier. Like, you don't have to strategize or think. You just live in your heart as you are, and you keep up-leveling who you are. And then all these amazing things start happening as a result. So anybody can take that strategy and become an amazing person and just do amazing stuff. And this is not coming from a place of ego whatsoever. I'm just trying to, like, you know, I'm trying to put myself empathetically in a place of somebody who's like, yeah, dude, you're full of shit. I don't fucking care. Whatever. You got all this money, and I can't even pay my rent. Screw you, and I don't want to hear about it, or whatever they say. I don't know why this avatar is Canadian in my mind, but yeah, buddy, whatever, you know, okay, yeah, okay, sorry. Sorry, Canadian.
That's all right, the posers.
But guys, like, I used to be skeptical and cynical too, so I get it. Mm-hmm. But then I just tried it. I suspended disbelief because I realized I wasn't getting the results. Like, all of the things that you have in your life right now are the result of the beliefs and the values that you held in the past. So in order to get a new, like, otherwise, if you keep doing the same stuff, you're going to keep getting the same results. So, you know, in order to change your future, you got to stop in the present and say, oh, what am I believing that's getting me here? And where do I want to go? What beliefs might I need to shift? And then just go collect those beliefs. Figure out what people who have those things in their life successfully clues. Figure out what they're thinking and doing and believing and who they're becoming and who they're showing up as. And then model more of that, and you'll get some more results as well.
Yeah. That's very, very powerful. You know, it's a lot of people are looking for, like, the, you know, like the life hack or, like, the quick fix of, like, just, you know, tell me the 1, 2, 3 stuff, and I think this is actually beautiful how you described it. It's not that. It's who you are as a person, and it's how you're growing as a person, and all of this stuff comes from, you know, your ability to grow and want. I think that's wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I hope people at home just understand, like, being a good strategist is like 20% of the thing. Mm-hmm. And good strategy comes from solid values and beliefs. Working, like, understanding people, like, if you just understand how to add value to people, you're way ahead of the game strategy wise because then, like, the best ideas just come to you because you're, like, in line and in flow, and you're not trying to create anything or hit a square peg into a round hole. You're just, you know, you just see an opportunity to fix somebody's problem, and then you just create a solution. And it's a simple, elegant solution, and you don't have to struggle, and it works. You know, and if it doesn't work, you don't get bent out of shape about it because you got 50 more fucking ideas. You know, it's like you need to figure it out. Excuse my language again. But at this point, I think the kids have gone to bed, so we're okay.
I think we're all right. What would you say is the best advice you've ever received?
The best advice I've ever received. That is a fantastic question. I've gotten so much great advice over the years. The best advice I ever received is that life is not about you. It never was and it never will be. Life is about everybody that you touch, that you impact, that you influence, that you serve. And as a function of that, you become what you were meant to become. But as soon as you start thinking about me and what was me and what can I get and what, you know, what about me, it's game over. You can't do anything from that place. But if you start from the place of what can I give, it's like unlimited. Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful. So again, it's you know, yeah, I do. Well, I love chatting with you, Brad, because you always bring up something so profound where I'm like, damn it, I'm speechless. I think we should end it at that because that's like that I feel really sums up our conversation for today. And then, so if the listeners at home want to reach out to you and hear more about what you're talking about and dig deeper with you, what's the best way they can reach out for you or to you?
Yeah, so I'm pretty available, but I have a pretty common name, Brad Hart, H-A-R-T. So check me out at makemoremarbles.com. Mm-hmm. You can check me out at marketyourcourse.com if you're interested in online courses or you had an audience that you want to monetize. You can check me out on Facebook, send me a note. I'm just facebook.com/Brad Hart, one word, okay. B-R-A-D-H-A-R-T. And I'm around the interwebs. I'm not hard to find. If you want to check out other things, just Google around, you find some stuff.
Sure, awesome. And I will put all those links in the show notes, so it'll be golden.
Thank you, Yuri, and I really appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for taking the time. And to the lovely listeners at home, thank you for sticking with us. I hope it's been helpful.
Sure. Thank you so much, Brett. As always, it's been game-changing. Thank you so much.
Take care, Yuri.
All right, bye. Thank you for listening to the Advance Your Art podcast. If you truly enjoyed this, please head over to iTunes and download additional interviews, as well as hit the subscribe button so that as new episodes come out, they will automatically go to your phone. Also, while you're there, please give us a 5-star rating, which helps our iTunes rankings. If you'd like to see more information, head on over to advanceyourart.com, where you can find information about each of the guests, as well as projects that I am working on. And always, if you're in the Boston area, please feel free to reach out. I can be found on Twitter at YCataldo, or you can email me, Yuri@advanceyourart.com. Thank you so much, and have a great day.